infer that this is a talk about dark matter, and you'd be right. But I'm going to give some dark matter motivation, and we've heard a lot of motivation over the last couple of days of why it's interesting to study hidden sectors, especially in the context of dark matter. And in particular, I'm going to be interested in what particle physics experiments has to say about hidden sectors. So I'll give a brief kind of motivation of why it's interesting to think about hidden sectors, how we might communicate with hidden sectors. In particular, I'm going to focus on so-called portals, and how dark matter fits into this picture. And after this kind of motivation, I'm going to focus on the U1 portal, or the kinetic mixing portal, which has been very popular as of late. In trying to use it to explain the signals from the cosmic rays. And then the main part of the talk is going to be devoted to probes of this U1 portal. And I'm going to try to emphasize the importance of high luminosity, high statistics experiments. Basically, because if we're thinking of a hidden sector with a weak coupling, we need a lot of statistics to overcome this weak coupling and get events. And two kinds of experiments I'll think of are colliders, in particular B factories, Babar and Bell. These are E plus E minus machines. And also fixed target experiments. And I'm gonna focus on the neutrino experiments, LSMD, Mini Boon, Minos. This is kind of how I like to think about, organize my thinking about hidden sectors and also just physics in general beyond the standard model. And this slide is very similar to the one that Anne showed yesterday. And so basically you can think of, if we think of all the space of models or theories versus energy, we have the standard model sitting here in the corner. And most of the time what people do is they think about sort of physics that is directly coupled to the standard model or charged under SU3 cross SU2 cross U1. And that's well motivated. We need physics like that to solve some of the problems that exist in the standard model, such as the hierarchy problem. And to probe these states are necessarily going to be heavy. Otherwise, we would have already produced them at colliders, or they would contribute unacceptably large, and you'd find deviations in precision observables, flavor observables. So here we need basically to go to the energy frontier. We need to go to high-energy colliders like the LHC Cybertron. But a perfectly reasonable, plausible possibility for new physics would be a hidden sector. And so you're going in this direction now. And you can imagine that the hidden sector is still has states in it that are still very light. And they'd be largely unconstrained in general, because they couple very weakly to the standard model. And so you could ask yourself, how would you probe this type of hidden sector? And you need some kind of a mediator or a portal, which I'll discuss in a moment more. And since it's going to be a very weak coupling, if at all, the way you're going to overcome this, it's not going to be kinematics that forbids you from probing this sector if it's light. But instead, it's going to be statistics. And so I'm going to think about, instead, high luminosity experiments. And of course, dark matter can fit into this picture, of course. It needs to somewhere. Just by the name dark, you might expect that it could be sitting in a hidden sector. Why not? Of course, it could also be in this sector coupled to the standard model. And that's what that's been the paradigm for the last however many years. But recently, there's been more motivation for dark matter sitting in a hidden sector. And I'm going to discuss that in a moment. So how would we find a hidden sector? Well, you could have a mediator, a particle charge under both sectors. So it has standard model charges and also charges under the new sector. Of course, this is going to have to be heavy, just by the same arguments I said before. We would have produced it if it wasn't. And so you can effectively integrate this particle out, this mediator, and that's going to induce generically higher dimensional operators. And if you're lucky, it could also induce a so-called portal, And this would be a renormalizable interaction, gauge invariant. And you can connect the standard model to the hidden sector with these portals. And it's easy to enumerate the portals in the standard model. There's the U1 portal, basically a kinetic mixing with the hypercharge, the Higgs portal, coupling via the Higgs master, and also the neutrino portal. And of these, the U1 portal is particularly attractive because it implies a coupling to the photon and the Z boson. And of course, we know a lot about the photon and the Z boson. And so it's a very nice a portal to think about. All right, so let me talk about dark matter, give a little bit of motivation as this is a dark matter conference. And so I'm going to think about dark matter through this U1 portal. And this was considered by Maxine and Adam and also Misha Voloshin. And of course, after that, many, many other people have been considering this type of a setup, perhaps too many to even list. But the basic idea is you have the standard model, and the WIMP resides in the hidden sector. And you have a kinetic mixing with the hypercharge. So the hidden sector has some new U1 symmetry. And you at low energies, you can write down this effective operator. And of course, this is due to Bob Holden, this kinetic mixing, back more than 20 years ago. And so I don't know. Nobody calls it the Holden boson yet, but maybe we should start doing that since it's becoming so popular. All right, so what they pointed out, though, Maxime and Adam and Misha, was that if the WIMP is sort of heavier than this mediator, you can basically decouple the standard paradigm where the annihilation, a weak scale annihilation cross section implies sort of weak scale detection rates, production at colliders with similar cross sections. Because you can see basically this is the dominant annihilation channel now. And it depends not at all on any interaction with the standard model. There's no kinetic mixing in this diagram with the standard model. It's completely separate. But of course, if we want to detect it, we're going to have to go through this portal, this kinetic mixing portal. And so you basically decouple those two parts, those two generic parts of thermal WIMP physics. And so in general, you can now seclude this WIMP from interactions with the standard model by sort of dialing down the kinetic mixing. But we also know that this kind of framework has very interesting astrophysical consequences. And this was pointed out by Tracy and collaborators, and also Maxime and Adam, and papers that appeared during the same week last year in October. And so the point is that if this U1 is light, say GeV scale or less, then you have the long range force that we've heard so much about that can enhance the galactic annihilation cross section. And furthermore, if the U1 is light GeV, it won't decay to protons, antiprotons, just by kinematics. And so you have this very interesting, if tenuous, connection with Pamela, Attic, Fermi, S. And so I think the U1 portal is sort of interesting in itself, but right now it's also very topical, and so it's good to study it for that reason as well. All right, so that's the last I'm basically going to say about dark matter for this talk, but I'm going to try to move now to particle physics signatures of this type of a scenario. And I'm going to look at a very minimal secluded U1 model. And so here's the Lagrangian. Besides the standard model Lagrangian, we have a WIMP. We have the U1 vector in this hidden sector, a mass term given by the Higgs in this hidden sector. And we have the interactions. We have the kinetic mixing with the photon. And we have also an interaction between the Higgs and the vector. So these are the relevant terms that I'm going to be needing for the consideration here. And of course, we can have many other particles in the hidden sector. And we're going to make the first kind of just the simplest assumption that they're heavy, say like the WIMP. WIMP would be heavy. And so it won't affect the physics at sort of lower energies. The effective coupling to the standard model, it's going to be basically the kinetic mixing times the electric charge. And so this is going to be very small if the kinetic mixing is small. Say 10 to the minus 3 would be a natural sort of value if it's, you think of integrating on a heavy particle. So this is going to be a very small coupling. And so in general, if you do scattering experiments, it's going to be very difficult to jump into this hidden sector and excite things. So what you need to do is try it many, many, many times. And so you need very high luminosity experiments. And that's going to be one of the main points. And it's something that, you know, it's not a new idea that high luminosity is a good thing. But in particular, for these hidden sector models, it's a very important property that you want your experiment to have. And so let me now look at some of the signatures. And so I'm gonna start with B factories. B factories, Babar and Bell, and there are other low energy E plus E minus machines. But in particular, these two machines have some qualities about them that are very interesting for this study. And so this has been looked at by these groups. Besides our group, also a group at SLAC, and then also a group at Princeton with Lin Top. Okay, so why do we like B factories? So these are E plus E minus colliders, and they have these following nice features: very large data sets. So again, very large luminosity, 500 inverse Febtibarns, actually more, but that's a kind of a good estimate for a potential study, 500 inverse Febtibarns each. And just to compare, say with the top of the line collider we have now, I guess we would say maybe Tevatron that has a few inverse Febtibarns. So for collider standards, this has a very large data set. And the other nice property is the center of mass energy is sort of low, GeV, 10 GeV. So this machine operates on the epsilon resonance B meson. And so it's right next to the scale, this kind of GeV scale where we are thinking of these new states. All right, so there's, depending on the model, there are many interesting processes that you could consider that would allow you to probe this hidden sector. But one very nice one is the Higgs-Strelong process. So it's just like very similar to the standard model of Higgs-Strelong. E plus E minus goes into a photon that oscillates into this vector. And then this off-shell vector can kind of decay into a Higgs and a vector. And as we'll see, this process is very kind of interesting because it can lead to a very novel signature, a 6-lepton final state. And so let's try to understand that a bit. If we look at the decays of this vector, on this side, I plotted the width versus the mass of the vector. You can see basically it has a very small width. It's very narrow, sort of KeV or less, depending on the mass. And then if you look at the branchings, for light vectors, they sort of branch into the E plus E minus pairs. And then, of course, as you go up, you pass the muon threshold, and then also eventually decay into, so this should be hadrons, not two vectors, of course. It doesn't decay into two vectors. It should decay into hadrons as well. But the main point is that there's always a very significant branching into leptons. So in this Higgs-Strelong process, this vector will give you two leptons. And the Higgs, the decays of the Higgs basically depend on whether it's heavier than the vector or lighter than the vector. So if we look at the heavy region first, so I'm plotting here MH and then branching again, it decays to two vectors. If it's heavy, almost all of the time. And then basically, I've chosen here a vector mass of 2 GeV. As you go down, then it prefers to actually decay through a loop-induced process into two muons. And that's just because it can no longer decay kinematically to two on-shell vectors. And so it would have to decay to off-shell vectors. So it decays to two leptons. And that's through a loop-induced process. And so in that case, there's a suppression of the kinetic mixing to the fourth power and a loop. And so you actually get a very tiny width. It's very long-lived, so it would appear, as in this case, for a light Higgs as missing energy. In the other case, when it decays to two vectors, so if it's sort of heavy, it decays to two vectors, and then those vectors can all further decay into leptons. So in the end, you can get 6 leptons. And so here are the sensitivities of the B factories. On the left panel is kinetic mixing of 10 to the minus 2. The right panel is 10 to the minus 3. And I've shown here the different signals, 6 electrons, 6 muons. This is in the mass of the Higgs versus the mass of the vector. And so basically, in this region, you can cover sort of all of the available kinematic space. For kappa 10 to the minus 3, you can still get very interesting 6 lepton signals that if you have sort of lighter vectors. The main point is that there could be many, many of these events sitting in the data tapes at these B factory experiments, and so the analysis should be done. All right, so I'm gonna switch gears now to the fixed target experiments. And this has been explored with electron beams by Lin Tao and Matt Reeves. And also recently, I think last week, there was a paper by, again, the Slack group, looking at limits from some of the older fixed target electron experiments and also proposing some new ones. And we're going to focus basically on proton beams. So the experiments that we're going to consider are these neutrino oscillation experiments, LSND, Mini-Boon, Minos, and then these next generation ones, NOVA, T2K. And the basic setup of the neutrino experiment is sort of like this. You have a proton beam come in, hits a target, makes lots of junk, hadrons. They decay to neutrinos. And you have, like, basically it's underground, so you have some dirt, filters out all the junk. The neutrinos just go through, they're weakly interacting, and then they can scatter in the detector. And so the junk will also, the junk likes to decay electromagnetically sometimes. The hadrons like to decay electromagnetically from time to time. And then because of this kinetic mixing, then they'll also decay, if possible, into these vectors and these Higgs. And so you also have, essentially, besides the neutrino beam, you also have a beam of hidden sector stuff. And the distance is kind of order 100 meters, depending on the experiment you're looking at. And so if the lifetime is such that it can sort of reach the detector and then decay, then you have a chance of seeing these signals. And so we can think about the advantages of the fixed target experiments. So you have a huge luminosity. Sort of the standard figure of merit is the number of protons on target. And so these sort of newer neutrino oscillation experiments have generally of order 10 to the 21 protons on target. And so that corresponds to luminosity of 10 to the 46, 10 to the 47 per centimeter squared. And you can compare that to, say, LHC, a year of LHC running, as 10 to the 41 per centimeter squared. So some 5 to 6 orders of magnitude equivalent, better luminosity. For these neutrino experiments, they also have a sort of nice feature, which basically you filter out all of the hadrons and charged particles, and so the only background you would have would be scatterings from neutrinos. And these experiments are sort of complementary to collider experiments, as the vectors sort of have to travel a far distance. They have to have a sort of smaller mixing, longer lifetimes. And so you can probe some of the smaller regime, the smaller kinetic mixing angle regime. All right, so OK, just a simple slide on how to estimate events. Of course, the number of events that you'll see in the detector would be the number of the things you produce at the target, times the probability that it goes into the detector and either decays or scatters. And for direct production, that would just be the cross-section force times the luminosity. And if you produce these hidden sector states through the decays of secondary hadrons, it would just be the number of hadrons times, of course, the branching of the hadrons into hidden sector states. And then a rough estimate for the probability that you detect the particle would just basically be, if you're thinking about the collision in the center mass frame, would just be basically the angle that the detector subtends, divided by the entire solid angle, so the fractional solid angle. And then if it's sort of long-lived, it would just be the length of the detector divided by the decay length. All right, so let's look at some bounds or sensitivities. For light vectors, sort of in the 100 of MeV range and below, if we think about just the vectors for now, they're going to decay, of course, into leptons. We can write the decay length as roughly 80 meters for the kappa of 10 to the minus 7. And so you can see we're going to be probing roughly this kind of range, 10 to the minus 7 for the kinetic mixing, compared to in the B factor experiments, which is more like 10 to the minus 2, 10 to the minus 3. And LS&D is going to be the experiment that provides the strongest sensitivity. And that was an 800 MeV kinetic energy proton beam. The detector was 30 meters away from the target. But the real kicker was that it's sort of like the luminosity king of all experiments done to date. So 10 to the 23 protons on target, it has something like 10 to the 48 per centimeter squared luminosity. So one main mechanism which you can produce these vectors would be, first the proton comes in, bombards the target, produces a bunch of neutral pions, and then they always like to decay sort of the two photons. But that means they're also going to decay occasionally to a photon plus a vector, roughly with a branching of the kinetic mixing squared. And so here are some sort of preliminary results for LS&D. I'm plotting again the kinetic mixing versus the mass of the vector. And you can basically see we're probing sort of down from the 10 to the minus 8 to the 10 to the minus 5, 10 to the minus 4 region, and up to sort of the kinematic limit, basically, which is the mass of the pion. Yeah, the different colors are just sort of number of events that you would expect. So here's the blue dots are sort of 10 events, red dots are 1,000, and yellow are a million events. And so at LS&D, they were looking for electron-like signals, basically from antineutrinos doing charge current scatterings off of the nuclei into positrons. And so they would have seen these events if when the vector decays. You can also excite the delta resonance at LS&D. There's enough kinetic energy to do that. And that allows you to go to somewhat higher kinematic regimes, up to, say, 200 MeV or so. So LS&D is going to provide some very very nice bounds or sensitivities sort of complementary to some of the results that came out from these past electron experiments, which also sort of probe this region here. Let's see, So what I meant was that, so people have looked at, a group looked at these electron experiments. So you have electron beam on a fixed target, and then again it goes to a detector and you detect it, and it's, yeah, they're complementary. So I think the bounds that they put out, I think over here we're going to probe a little bit lower in this regime of kappa versus mass, and I'm not sure if we'll quite get up to where they were in terms of kinematic or the mass of the vector. You can also look at the Higgs bosons, and so we've only done a little bit of work on this yet, basically the idea again is that depending on the mass of the Higgs, It will have different properties. So if it's heavy, heavier than the vector, it will just decay sort of very promptly. Too short-lived in that case for the fixed targets to be very useful. And in fact, if it's the light Higgs, it actually has the loop-induced decay, and it's almost too long-lived for at least for the decay into the detector. But in this intermediate regime, you can sort of hit the sweet spot. And there'll be limits from different experiments. I'll show the bounds. I'll show what we get in a minute. But yeah. So I can just. So again, Allison D is an important experiment for the light Higgs, and then the heavier Higgs is Mini Boon and Minos will provide a. So basically, what you can see, it's basically a very thin strip right here for the Higgs. But I should mention also that this long-lived Higgs will also be limits, basically because it can also convert back into the vector. So it goes into the detector, scatters, exchanges a vector with the nucleus, emits a vector, and then they'll basically decay immediately for this kind of regime. And so we will still probe this region. So that's in progress. But these are just kind of preliminary limits from, again, pi naught can now go to three bodies. Three-body decay can go to a vector and a Higgs, and the Higgs can be long-lived. Sort of by this kinematic accident, if it's just lighter than the vector. And the branching is going to be basically, again, kappa squared times some phase space suppression. But now with the Higgs, we don't have to go to really small kappa. We can pick sort of larger values just because it's long-lived just by kinematics, essentially. All right, so but some of the work that's in progress on this U1 sector, we'll have at Mini Boon and Minos, we can sort of excite rho's and omegas, other hadrons, they can decay to the vector and Higgses. You can also just have QCD production of vectors and Higgses. So NuMi, actually, it's a higher energy beam, sort of 15 GeV center of mass. And so you could have a QCD production, sort of, again, Higgs-Strelong. And then also, as I just mentioned, the Higgs to vector conversion. And still some more things that we're working on. Of course, we want to look at the projected sensitivities of the next generation experiments. And another kind of very interesting possibility is that you could have, so the one time I'll mention dark matter again, you can have a dark matter beam. So the idea is, again, you either produce these dark matter particles in the collisions, or the vectors or Higgses could decay into those in these models of MEV dark matter. And LSND will provide some strong constraints on these models. And of course, all the things I've said don't just apply to this V1 portal, but you can look at the other portals, the Higgs portal, the neutrino portal, also axions, higher dimensional operators. The main point, again, is that the high luminosity experiments are sort of a very nice setting in which to probe hidden sectors. OK, so let me conclude. I've tried to convince you that hidden sectors are sort of very generic, very plausible possibility for new physics. Besides stuff that's at the higher energy scales and trying to solve the problems of the standard model. Dark matter, there's been some recent hints that dark matter could reside in the hidden sector. And just on general kind of grounds, dark matter could be in the hidden sector. And the high luminosity experiments are, particle physics experiments are a nice way to go in looking at these kinds of hidden sectors. And so I've talked about just a simple U1 portal, but B factories are a nice way to probe sort of couplings in the 10 to the minus 2, 10 to the minus 3 range. There could be many events sitting in tape if these models were correct, and you had this sort of kinematic and coupling if you were in that right range. And then also fixed target experiments, which have a much higher luminosity, can probe sort of the smaller regions of the coupling. Okay, thanks.
Remind me, what is the main limiting factor in your case for the reach? Because now you have multiple platforms, so it's a 3D platform, it's not the most important. So is that just French information?
Compared to say production with one vector and a photon, I think the cross section is a bit smaller. Like you have some kind of a T-channel enhancement in the scattering.
Well, I imagine you can decay from epsilon.
Decay from epsilon?
Yeah.
Into. Yeah, that's. Yeah, we thought about that, and that's not very likely, I think. So you mean epsilon into Higgs vector?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not going to be very likely. I mean, the coupling between the photons.
Epsilon with S to E plus E minus is like a couple percent. So this is basically similar. It's an off-shell vector. Off-shell.
But it's the same process. It's the same distinguishable, right? So what you're saying is you take E plus and minus, produce an off-shell gamma, it goes to 4S and then goes back to...
But you do have a bit of intensive.
No, you actually don't. No, you actually don't. That's the point. You don't have,
you produce the epsilon, but the probability that it's going to go back into the photon and then into the...
I understand. It's just not... But I'm just saying the cross-section.
If you look at the Babar scattering rate, the contribution of epsilon to that is, it's well below the same.
Moreover,
it's the same kind of process.
You gotta be said that if someone has given an infinite amount of money and, with the task of searching for this, you gotta go away from the resonance because they're not helping, they're just creating more particles. So you gotta be sitting away from the resonance or scanning, trying to find this V pole.
But it was a B factory, not a V factory.
Any other questions? Okay, let's thank Brian again and